5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hey everybody, I'm Brian Clapp, VP of Content and Engaged Learning at WorkInSports.com, and this is the Work in Sports Podcast. If you've ever heard me talk before about networking, you know that I believe there are five types of people you need in your network. One of those people I call the connector. They are the person who knows everyone and loves to connect the dots between who they know. This is a special attribute within some people. They are naturals at getting to know people and then figuring out ways their connection should get to know each other. They're always connecting the dots. You over here. Oh, hey, I met you at this conference and I knew you from this prior work experience. And I think you two could be really good friends, or you guys could really help each other. For me, connectors are an extremely valuable part of my network. I need them. When I have my sights set on a guest for this show, the first thing I seek is, okay, which one of my connectors do I think may know them? So here's a perfect example. A little over a month ago, I read a story on Ryan Creelan, commissioner of the ECHL. The story explained how he was once an intern at the ECHL and over 17 years worked himself up to eventually become the commissioner of the league. That's the kind of story that gives me the tingles. Like, seriously, isn't that all of our dream? You get an internship at a great organization, then you get hired, then you advance, then you become the boss. I mean, it sounds like something out of a cheesy movie on Lifetime, but this is real life. Like, you hear things, you hear this sometimes, like, oh, the CEO of this major corporation started out as an intern. But I haven't known too many people that actually applies to. And this is it. This is a real life example. So I had to land Ryan as a guest because I think these are the stories we all need to hear. So I'm thinking in my network, I'm like, all right, who might know Ryan that could connect me with him? My first guest was Bill Gertine. Bill is a former guest on this podcast. He's a sales trainer, one of the best in the business, and he is the very definition of a connector. I knew Bill did a lot of sales training with minor league hockey teams, baseball teams, different leagues, professional, otherwise. And I knew there was a pretty good chance that he would know Ryan. It was pretty solid. So I reached out to Bill. Hey, Bill, I read this article about Ryan Creelan. It was super interesting about how he went from intern to commissioner in the ECHL. I'd love to get him as a podcast guest. You wouldn't happen to know him, would you? Within 10 minutes, Bill was connecting Ryan and I for today's interview. Networking is more than just knowing the right people to help you get a job. It's having advisors who can help you through tough decisions, connectors who can introduce you to the right people, insiders who know what's happening in the industry at all times, idealists who see the potential in everything, and the realists who help keep you grounded when you need to be. Bill Gertine did me a great service, and that's the power of my network that I've created over a couple decades. I mean, it doesn't happen overnight. You got to work at it. Now I owe Bill something. I'll figure that out later. Today's guest, Ryan Creelan, as I mentioned, is the commissioner of the ECHL Minor League Hockey League, with 26 teams spread across the U.S. and Canada. The teams roughly equate to a double-A baseball team, so that's kind of the equivalent here. The ECHL is like double-A, a minor league feeder system for the NHL. And as a reminder, before we get into this, this interview was conducted before coronavirus became a thing. Their league was in operation. Games were being played. Ryan and I were hitting it off. We're talking really positively. So there's not going to be any mention of their suspended season or how it will affect them moving forward. Maybe we'll do a follow-up in the future and we'll talk to Ryan again. But right now, focus on the ton of knowledge personally about Ryan advancing through the organization to become commissioner, his goals, the way he set strategies for himself, and on understanding how a minor league team can survive on the sports scene. Here's ECHL Commissioner Ryan Creelan. Hey, Ryan, how's it going today?
I'm great. Thank you. Yourself?
It's so cool to have you on because I think you have such an interesting story, starting out as an intern with the ECHL and then now being the commissioner. And I really want to dig into that. There's something else I really loved about your resume is that you graduated from Seton Hall in 2006 and you've been working at the ECHL since 2005. There's something really endearing about that because I literally talk to hundreds of executives and people in the sports industry every year, and all of us, we're jumping all over the place. We're going from job here and there. I'm telling people all the time, you have to be willing to relocate and change and move up. I'm one of those people. I've jumped all around the country. For you, though, you've been at this company for nearly the last 20 years. Why has that been important to you to get into the ECHL and just stay there?
Well, I think it's a combination of factors. I mean, first off, I'm born and raised in Jersey. The ECHL happens to be in Jersey. And at the same time, I also grew up playing hockey. And so to be able to get into the sport you love at such an early age in the state that you live in, that probably doesn't happen too often. And so that's a unique combination. And quite honestly, I'm a creature of habit and have always had the ability to grow and advance my career in the ECHL. So when you take all of those things combined, this is the end product.
Yeah, that's a really good point, too, because I think so many people hit roadblocks, and that's why they move somewhere else. So I started out at CNN Sports Illustrated, and if I wanted to get in the media, and if I wanted to get into more of a management role, well, those positions were blocked. But it sounds like what you're saying is the path was ahead of you. You could see where you could go within the ECHL, so it made sense to stay there. Is that right?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And, there have been other opportunities that have come around that would have required a move, but could have been an advancement. But there was enough foresight there where I realized that staying at the ECHL could offer me the same opportunity.
So to start out as an intern and develop into the league commissioner, it almost sounds fake, right? It almost sounds like a Lifetime movie, a feel-good story. Like nobody would believe it. They'd read the script and be like, nah, come on, that doesn't really happen, you know? But it's true. You're very real, and I think that's fascinating. So what was your mentality and approach when you first started out in the ECHL? Did you have these big goals? Did you envision these things? Or was it just kind of a step-by-step process?
It's a long time ago to dial back in my mind. I mean, first off, it's funny, but I always thought of myself as a league guy versus a team guy. And there is a distinct difference between being on either side of that line. So for me to get in with the league early on was, I think, important to my career. And I knew that's where I wanted to be and would try and advance. I think when you start out coming out of college, usually the major pros are kind of that shiny object, and that's what you aspire to. But I figured at the ECHL, I'm coming in as an intern. My first goal is going to be to try and get a job out of the internship and then grow from there. And I set my goals. I'm not going to say that I was like, oh, I'm going to be commissioner of this league in whatever amount of time period. But as time went over, it certainly became something that I at least wanted to take a run at. And fortunately, it was able to come to fruition.
You said something really interesting in there, that you thought you were more of a league guy than a team guy. And that's interesting. So give that perspective to our audience a little bit. How do you define those differences of what it would be like to work for a specific team versus more of an overarching role with the league looking at everything happening?
Yeah, to tell you what the difference is, I mean, I just kind of felt it. But as a league guy, you don't have a favorite team, and you're not experiencing rooting for your team at games throughout the season, right? So our teams have 36 home games, 72 total games. We've got 900-plus games plus playoffs. Right. So it's just a different perspective. And when we go to games, we don't have a rooting interest. Right. Maybe we're rooting for the officiating team. That's about it. And again, it's just a different feel. And I've seen people go from league to team and team to league and not be able to do it. Maybe at some point in my career, I will try the team side. But the league side has been a fit for me.
It's almost like you're cheering when you're there. You're cheering for a viral moment, like something really cool to happen that you can share out there and get a lot of buzz for the entire brand.
Yeah, we're cheering for the fans to have a good time, for it to be a good, clean game, and that it's good for the sport of hockey.
So give us a little bit of insight into your path. We know you started out as an intern, and we know you are now the commissioner, but fill in that gap for us. What kind of specific skills did you refine in your ascension? What kind of roles did you take on, and how did that help you get to the point of commissioner?
Yeah, so I started as an intern in kind of the marketing and team services division at the ECHL, but I would tell you my background is kind of finance and business ops. And as I was completing my internship, there happened to be an opportunity in kind of the business and team services area. And, you know, started out with a coordinator title fresh out of college and just continued to build on the business ops side of things. At the same time, though, I never am one to turn anything away. And I always want to keep learning and doing more. And so there were roles or gaps in our office that I thought I could fill, and I would ask and take those things on. And just, again, never turn an assignment away. And, you know, in terms of title, I think I just kind of grew up, you know, as a coordinator, manager, director, ultimately VP of business ops. But it was more than just the title. It was the willingness to go take on some of those other roles. At the same time, I went back for my master's and got an MBA, concentration in finance and taxation. So that added to my skill set. And again, at that point, you're getting experience, tenure, more skills, and then ultimately up to COO and now this position.
It's really impressive. So let's talk about that master's a little bit. You went back and got your MBA at Rutgers, like you said, with an emphasis in finance and taxation. So how big of a role did that extra layer of business and revenue knowledge play into your growth in the industry? Because really, we know from the league side, you're running the entire business and you have to be really deeply connected to the revenue and how it all pencils for the industry. How much did that extra MBA help you in that ascension?
Yeah, I mean, I tell you what, it's funny how things work, because I went into it thinking one thing and came out of it with another, because, you know, you go through the coursework and I did learn some skills and were able to apply those, but it really changes your thinking as much as anything.
Okay.
Because you're in there with people from all different industries with different roles and titles that are working in real world and sharing their experiences. So, you know, I often find that we're so siloed in our day to day that you don't necessarily get the outside perspective. And that's probably what I took away most from those courses were, again, a little bit of skill work and applying some of the tactical and practical, but it was really the other people's real world experiences and how they go about it in their industry that I found most rewarding.
I think that's really an interesting point, because while I haven't gotten my MBA or been through that kind of an experience, like, I find a lot of times my wife works for a more Fortune 100 company. And so sometimes just speaking with her and understanding the way they look at things versus how we look at things in the sports industry, it just kind of opens your mind to a different way of processing information or dealing with a situation or, you know, speaking high level or whatever it may be. And so there's a lot to learn just from being around other people.
Correct. And taking, you know, some of their thoughts and then applying it to our business.
Yeah.
That's where I made the most headway.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I do want, we have at least one member of our audience who currently works for an ECHL team, Scott McDonald with the Atlanta Gladiators. And I told him I was going to embarrass him by mentioning it by name. He's in ticket sales. He's in ticket sales now. How important do you see it for a young person getting going to show that they can generate revenue? Because that's really the big thing that stirs the drink. It's like there's no fancy facilities, there's no coaches, there's no players if they're not bringing in revenue. And so having that kind of an experience, how important do you see that for growth?
I mean, to me, it's at the top of the list. And to go back to what we just talked on, you know, in my own personal journey, again, I kind of came in through a slightly different business and financial path, but I knew if I wanted to advance my career and get to where I wanted to be, I needed to have those skills. So, you know, that was one of the things that I saw at the ECHL when an opportunity opened up where I started selling for the league and wanted to do those things. And some people may be apprehensive to take that on, but I knew that to get to where I wanted to be, I would need those skills. So I jumped into it. And at the end of the day, if you're not producing revenue, you don't have a company. And that's why I put it at the top of the list. And as commissioner in this role, it's something that I try and prioritize to our staff at the league, to all of our team staff, and put programs in place that focus on helping our ticket and corporate sales teams, you know, advance their careers and able to grow their books of business.
Let's talk a little bit about the ECHL as a league. It is the primary developmental league for the NHL and AHL, and that includes players, coaches, and even referees. I read recently there were 57 former ECHL players on NHL rosters this year's opening night, and another 37 coaches with ECHL background, including Boston Bruins head coach Bruce Cassidy, which is really astounding when you think about it, that this is such a great pipeline. But I also wonder, how much of a role does the ECHL play in developing the game itself? Are you guys able to try out new techniques, try to solve problems that could be that fans are experiencing, or try new fun things? What role do you guys play in developing the game?
So as you mentioned, in terms of personnel, we've developed a lot of hockey ops personnel and a lot of front office personnel as well. Again, I think we take pride in seeing our people move up to the next level. But in terms of the game, that's something that I do take to heart and want to be progressive in, and speaking with the higher leagues as well in terms of what they'd like to see, and not only what they'd like to see, but I think a good example would be 7-minute overtime. So that's something that we kicked around in our competition committee, ultimately brought it to our board and approved for this 2019-20 season. So we're only, you know, halfway, a little over halfway through, but we've been able to launch 7-minute overtime, and we've been, you know, pretty excited with the results. And I think that's part of who the ECHL can be. We can try new things at our level, and, you know, maybe you'll see other levels adopt it in the future, and maybe all of hockey at some point. And, you know, that's one example. I want to continue to grow on that type of mentality.
That's great that you can almost act as a test market. It is interesting, too. You have so many diverse markets where your teams are. There are 26 teams in the ECHL, and you guys run the entire gamut. There's hockey in the South with multiple teams in Florida and in Georgia. There's hockey in the Midwest with teams in South Dakota and Kansas and Utah and Texas and even Idaho. And then up as far north in Canada in Newfoundland. I imagine every team has a different challenge attracting and retaining their audience. Their audience members are different. They have different needs and wants and things that they're drawn to. How much do you as a league work with your teams to understand their opportunities and threats and how to work in a best practice sense?
Yeah, so we run the gamut, as you just said, from a geographic standpoint, from a traditional versus non-traditional market standpoint, from a size and demographic market standpoint, and then building-wise as well. You know, we're in small of a building as 4,700 on up to 16, 17, 18,000-seat state-of-the-art building. So
yeah.
We're all over the map. However, you know, we've been fortunate enough to really get with our board and break down the idea. Like, we compete on the ice, but we don't compete off the ice. And so our team service division is constantly gathering information, sharing information with all of our teams in terms of figures and best practices and new ideas, doing conference calls. When I do my visits to each of the teams, I try and spend times with the senior management and discussing things and have you tried this. And certainly things do need to be tweaked market to market, but on the whole, we've been able to see success by sharing those great ideas.
Yeah, it is interesting when I talk with executives that so much they speak about how they're not competing with each other. And I love to hear that, is that they're trying to make the best possible experiences for the fans, and they're trying to really understand their audience. And I just have to imagine it's a great challenge for you guys, because the fan base in South Dakota is going to be a lot different than the fan base in Florida and a lot different from the fan base in Newfoundland. So it's definitely, I got to imagine, a kind of a fun challenge. I will say, too, when I talk with people in minor league baseball, they talk about how it's important it is to be both unique and hyper-local in their team names and logos, that the revenue generated and the merchandising has been key to their profitability. How big of a role does that play in the ECHL? Do you guys really focus in on the names and logos and likenesses and some of the other sponsorship activities that you can do to help drive merchandise sales?
Yeah, at the end of the day, that's the team's decision. And we have some teams that have had their logo and mark for over 20 years. But at the same time, for some of the newer teams and move, like, I do think minor league sports is hyper local and has the ability to get fun and creative and create that family environment with a fun character. So I certainly preach that to any new ownership or membership group coming into the league. Again, ultimately, it's their idea to run with it, but I think it is an opportunity for us to create something fun. So when you look around and you see a walleye with a missing tooth and a hockey stick, or the Everglades down in Fort Myers, which is such a creative play on words and a phenomenal logo, again, I just think we've been afforded that opportunity, so why not run with it and get some not only local appeal to it, but I think if you create something really fun and exciting, it can get national appeal. I mean, I remember when the Growlers first launched their logo, whatever it is, a year and a half, 2 years ago. Not shortly thereafter, I was on the West Coast and I saw somebody wearing a Growlers jersey. So if you take that opportunity and create something really cool, I think in today's world where everything gets shared so quickly, it can resonate around the country, around the continent, maybe even around the globe.
I even saw, too, actually my kids really perked up when I talked about this. I even saw that you guys did some sponsorship deals with Marvel Comics, DC Comics and Marvel. So you had an Iron Man night and you had Superman jerseys. How much does this stuff make an impact? Because that really seems very family friendly.
Yeah, no. I mean, you're talking about a great opportunity for our league and our teams to partner with international entertainment brands, and able to take what they're doing with their characters and their stories and interweave them with our hockey team. So it heightens the entertainment value, creates that family-friendly environment, as you were discussing, creates some really cool jerseys while we're at it. And, the other thing, too, is when we're producing those nights and then bringing them to our market, there are fans of those brands that may not necessarily be hockey fans and never even think of coming out to the arena, but this gives them an opportunity to, put on their Marvel costume or their DC costume or whatever it is. It gives them that opportunity and they want to be a part of that, but also experience a hockey game at the same time. And maybe they become a hockey fan over the long haul.
Yeah, it does seem like minor league sports in general, especially the ECHL, that your goal is to bring in families and introduce young fans and have a great experience. How do you go about focusing on that and making sure that your brand is associated with a really family fun event?
First off, we preach that mantra as being affordable family entertainment. Putting packages together that appeal to families, again, incorporating some of those entertainment brands. I know we also work with Nickelodeon. I have two young boys who at this point hockey's not really on their radar, but every Nickelodeon character is. And so when you put packages that a family of any size can afford and come out and have a good time, that's how I think you position yourself for success. And then, you know, in terms of our on-ice product, it's never been faster and more skilled and family-friendly. And, you know, it's still hockey. There's body checking and can be rough and tumble at times. But on the whole, I think we've got a really family-oriented product.
Trust me, my 8-year-old saw me researching yesterday and saw the picture of the Iron Man jerseys you guys have, and then saw the Nickelodeon ones and was like, "Dad, I want one." So I think you're hitting the mark. I think you're doing really well. What are the biggest challenges you face as a league moving forward? You're in some really big markets. You're in some smaller markets. You're in some different places. What are the challenges you face as a commissioner? What do you look for towards your future?
Well, I think the biggest challenge is creating new fans and welcoming them to the arena. I look at market research and polls all the time, and professional ice hockey across the country and certainly in our markets still doesn't resonate. And I use this story all the time, but you know, you'll ask people if they want to go to a hockey game, and they'll say, "No, I don't like hockey." And then you say, "Well, have you ever actually gone?" And they say, "No." Well, how do you know that you actually don't like going to a hockey game if you've never been? So it's how do we create those new fans and get them to come out and experience our product? Because we often hear afterwards how great the atmosphere was, how fast-paced the environment was, how they had such a good time, great experience. But we need to get them in the building first to have that experience. So that's our challenge, and you know, we still have a long road ahead of us, but I'm confident that we're doing the things that are sending us in the right direction.
I do think it's fascinating. So I grew up in Boston, so hockey was just kind of in your blood. And I had a high school friend who played in the NHL for 17 seasons. And so you go to the games, and it's a completely different experience. You know, people don't always understand that being in the arena, no matter what the size is, no matter what the skill level is, at a hockey game is one of the coolest experiences you can ever have in sports. And I think that once you get people there, they get hooked. So I find it is interesting that, like, you know, that's the challenge is, like, let's get them in the door. Let's get them having this experience. Let's have this fun. And they're going to be hooked and they're going to want to come back.
Yeah, no. I mean, that's priority A1. We certainly have plenty else to work on, but that's at the top of the list.
For sure. So we have a lot of interns in our audience. A lot of our audience is very young, trying to carve their own niche into the sports industry, and they're trying to make a name for themselves. What final advice would you give to any of the young people out there listening and hoping to maybe someday be a commissioner like you? I mean, you like all of us, you started out as an intern and you grew up to a point of your career that you're doing incredibly well now. What advice would you have for the younger audience just to help set them on the right path?
Well, I think it starts with what I said earlier in terms of don't be afraid to take on new challenges, and maybe to the contrary, seek out new challenges. The more that you can take on and expand your skill set and show your value to the organization, the better you're going to position yourself to advance in that organization. So, listen, there were times where I was taking on challenges that I didn't have the slightest of clues. But I researched it. I mean, you've got, you know, the world at your fingertips these days. So I would research and learn, maybe even put my own spin on things, but just continue to grow my skill set, even going outside of my comfort zone. And when you do that, you build yourself as a person as an employee, and people around you will see that.
It's so true. Everybody wants to hire and be around people and promote people who are problem solvers, like figuring out solutions to problems and being that person willing to jump in and take action and get smarter and be curious. So that's a really powerful message to share. Ryan, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It is great advice you're sharing. Our audience is really going to gravitate towards all of this, and I hope all of them go buy tickets to an ECHL game.
Me too.
Thanks for coming on, Ryan.
All right. Thanks, Brian.
Big thanks to Ryan for coming on the show. My hopes, I mean this, I've been thinking about Ryan and the ECHL a lot. Matter of fact, if you've heard my interviews with Kenneth Shropshire and Greg Hilton lately, I keep asking others, other experts out there, what do you think about the smaller leagues? Do you think they're going to be able to come out of this? Because honestly, the ECHL is on my mind. I know we have many people in our audience who work in the ECHL, and I strongly believe minor league sports are wildly important to our overall sports atmosphere. I personally love going to minor league games. It's like sports at its finest, if you ask me. It's a bunch of people who aren't getting paid much, who just really love and are passionate. You get up close and personal to the game. It's intimate. It's fun. It's creative. Some of my most enjoyable sports moments have been at minor league games, and I'm a guy who grew up in Boston going to Celtics games and Bruins games and Patriots games and Red Sox games at some of the cathedrals of sports, if you ask me. But some of my fondest memories are going to like a Portland Pirates minor league hockey game, or going to the Trenton Thunder minor league baseball, or the Worcester Railers. I mean, there's so many different minor league teams out there, and that's sports at its purest, if you ask me. So my thoughts are with the ECHL and every other smaller league and team out there that's trying to find their way through this global pandemic. Good luck to ECHL, and thanks again to Ryan for coming on the show, and for all of you listening at home. I really appreciate every single one of you, and I want to be here to help. So connect with me on LinkedIn, join our private Facebook group for this podcast. You can search for the Work in Sports Podcast on Facebook and join our group and keep that conversation going. The more we can be a community and help each other out, the better for all of us. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.